Good afternoon. I've lost the run of myself. Good morning. You're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show here in Highland. 7 minutes past 10. A big thanks once again to Mary T. Sweeney, to Finan Bradley and John McAteer. Really enjoyed the conversation with them. And just to some of your comments coming in so far this morning, Mary T. is correct. The bridge in Letterkenny needs to be built ASAP, considering the town takes twice the volume of traffic than Sligo daily, travelling in and through it daily. And just on that issue too, because some of the work that's ongoing at the moment, some people feel that it's actually worsening the situation. So I'll throw this text in at this time too. The footpath at the schools, the boys' school in Letterkenny, is no good for the emergency services. There's too much congestion in Letterkenny town. It looks like Justice Walsh Road is to get a footpath too. We need to think of the emergency services and make the town accessible, not all blocked up. A caller says they believe Fianna Fáil have failed this country. We got a minister who delivered next to nothing for us. He should have been the best asset we got, and we should have seen so much come to this county. But instead, he turned his back on the fishermen, farmers and defective block families. Now, of course, I'm not here to make the argument on behalf of the minister, but he would argue that he's delivered quite a bit in terms of investment in piers and marine infrastructure and fishing schemes for inshore fishermen and, you know, the veterinary college and so on and so forth. And I think it's very important too, because I want to hear all voices on this show. So, you know, if you are, and many, many, many of you are, and this is why it's very probable, you know, the status quo will be returned after the next general election. It's very important if you're also a Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael supporter to text in shows like this as well. I know maybe those that are more angry with the way the country is being run might be more inclined to text. And I want to offer you as much balance as is possible. So if you are a supporter of the party or whatever, or of the minister, and you say, well, that's not fair, he has delivered for us, in inverted commas, well, then please feel free to get your phone out and text in as well. A caller says, no accountability is right, Mary. If the Irish government was in charge of the sand in the Sahara Desert, there'd be no sand left. A joke of a government, they believe. Then you look at the opposition and it doesn't fill you with much hope. For years, people have been talking about the power of civil servants. Any member now at this stage that has signed off on any extravagant contract should resign or be sacked without a golden handshake. It's the people's money, and the ordinary person scrimping and saving, dicing on rent, food, ESB or heating, and they're squandering much needed money. And that is, I think, what hurts, because it doesn't talk to the everyday struggles that many families across this region and beyond face on a daily. Who gave BAM, the company responsible for the children's hospital, another contract? Plus, they have the nerve to tender for the new maternity hospital. They should be banned from ever tendering for public works again. Civil servants should be charged with the TDs, or they should be changed with the TDs. And this is kind of like the permanent government who, and I've said it on this programme for many years, effectively do run the country. And the elected politicians seem to tinker around the edges, but often it feels like it's the civil servants that actually make all the big decisions. BAM at the moment, under the current tendering process, can tender for whatever they like. And I believe the rules would have to be changed to preclude them from doing so, if that were the will. A couple of comments here on different things that I'd be very interested in your views on, actually. And this came in from a mum, and I thought this really interesting. And I think there's advanced driver's courses and what have you, but maybe listeners can help. But can you imagine yourself in this situation? Well, I think this mum's done a fantastic thing here. So the listener says, yesterday I got a call about my daughter's driving. Okay, so I don't know if it was from a neighbour or a friend or whatever. So mum says, when I got home, I went through her dash cam, which is connected to my phone. Her driving was like a stage of the Donegal rally. My question is there a course these young drivers can go on to teach them the dangers of the road? Now, I'm guessing here, because I'm having to fill in the blanks, I think mum was very shocked by her daughter's driving. She described it as being like a stage of the Donegal rally. Now, she's probably over 18, and you can sit them down and you can say, look, you know, I saw what you did. You need to be careful. But I would say the parent is concerned that they'll go, yep, no problem. Of course I will. And then continue with their more dangerous driving. So this parent, I'm not actually sure if it's a mum or a dad, this parent wonders, is there any courses that she could get her get her daughter to go on that she could sort of maybe get more of a reality check on the dangers of the road, and I think they feel that that might be more inclined to change your driving behaviour. So are there any such courses out there? Please let me go. Let me know, sorry. Another listener says, a fight broke out in my town last night. The guards were sitting near the road. They stood back and watched and waited until the fight got too dangerous and then intervened. If bouncers are able to control fights, why can't the guardie? One of the people in the fight had to be taken away in an ambulance. It should not have been allowed to get to that stage. The town's getting too rough. You can't even go for a drink anymore without trouble in the town. I presume they're talking of Letterkenny. And not because they mentioned trouble, but often when it's just referred to as the town and nothing else, it's more often than not Letterkenny. I can't talk to the operational decisions that they had to make. Maybe they needed backup. Maybe there is a they were outnumbered. And they had to wait until such time as it was safe for them to go in. I'm not really quite sure of that, but I would say it's just not as simple as running in there. They have to look after themselves as well. There'll be nothing done to Israel until they've achieved what they want to achieve. They are so deeply entrenched in finances and politics in the US and UK that they are untouchable. I actually believe their master plan is to start to steal some of the Lebanese land next, as they've done so, Palestine, for over 80 years unopposed. Now, it also is worth mentioning, and it should be mentioned to try and be fair, is that, you know, there's 40 or 50,000 Israelis in the north of the country along the Lebanese border that have had to move south, to move away from that area, because all the while that Israel has been involved in Gaza, there have been drones and mortars and what have you being sent from Hezbollah into northern Israel. So it's not like they haven't been doing anything for 8 or 9 months. They have been at that. And as I say, there are quite a few Israelis displaced as well. How all that fits into the wider scheme of things, and, you know, like, if you think Israel exploded in what will go down in history as the most targeted strike ever, they exploded these thousands of pagers and walkie-talkies that were in the possession of Hezbollah, and then proceeded then to effectively, they haven't invaded the country yet, but that's on the cards, to begin the bombing of just across the border. It's quite the response. So I don't know where it all ends. I really don't know where all that ends, because you also have to factor in Iran backing Hezbollah, and even the likes of Donald Trump there at the moment, he's had his security stepped up because of fears of an assassination attempt planned or hatched in Iran as well. It's getting messy. John McAteer, it's a totally personal view. There's lots of good programmes on RTE, of course, and that stands to reason. Lots of people put RTE on and never switch it off and love it. That's John's view. Others have different views, and that's what makes this world great. We can have different views and love each other still. Another caller says, RTE not balanced. They are puppets for the government. Think back COVID and since. They're supposed to hold politicians to account, but that is not happening. The politicians get soft interviews on all stations. Right, let me see. The Sinn Féin canvassers were around Newtown Cunningham last week. Yeah, I'm not surprised. You need to get in early. Another, as long as RTE is funded by the government, then they will never be, there'll never be full disclosure on anything or fair representation of the different parties. Just look at the local elections and the bad rap many independent individuals got. Nor will there be fair representation of any or any party, anyone or any party who goes against the party agenda. Do people think it's a waste of money showing the likes of Naked Dating on RTE? I think it's a shame for RTE. Naked Dating? Is that on RTE? Is this a show that's presented? I saw Paramount had a show where there's like four boys, four girls, five boys, five girls. They're all stalkers. No pixeling out or anything. They're all stalkers in a villa somewhere or other, according to the advertisements. I haven't seen it because I don't have Paramount Plus. Is that the show that's showing on RTE at the moment? What time is it? Filter anything out, I'm told. Just before the break, I want to play a request for Julia Gallagher, who is 11 today. Now, Julia probably in school, but maybe you can play it back to her on the podcast. It'll just be towards the start of the second hour. So a big request for Julia Gallagher, who is 11 today. Happy birthday and have a great day. Love Mammy, Daddy and Blake. Could you play it around 8:45? I heard Gooch play that one already, so there you go. Hopefully she heard it in the car. Gooch got that one smack on at 8:45. And you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show, and welcome on to it right now. Jennifer Kilduff, who's head of marketing and PR with the AA. Good morning to you, Jennifer. Thanks for your time.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Now, we're talking about a new survey conducted by the AA, and it has uncovered some key trends in driving behaviour and etiquette on Irish roads. And it's a big pool of people that were polled, so to speak, 2,600. So pretty representative, one would hope. What were the key findings, or what do you see as some of the key findings from an AA perspective?
Well, from our perspective, what we found was, the importance of our customers understanding what dangerous driving is, which was great to see.
Yeah.
All of the key things like driving under the influence of alcohol, drugs, using your mobile phone, speeding, they all came out on top, which you would expect would. But then other things like frustrations on the road came out. 90% said that aggressive driving was like their biggest pet peeve, poor use of indicators, wrong lane usage. So I suppose what it highlights for us is that, yes, we understand what the dangers are, but we're kind of continuing to do them. So at what point is it going to be personal responsibility of us to kind of sit back and say, okay, well, it's not just me on the road. You know, the indicators are on a car for a reason. It's a safety measure. Obeying speed limits. Only 56% said they always obey speed limits, which is kind of worrying. And then 2% said they blatantly kind of never or rarely obeyed speed limits. So there's some worrying things in there. But then there's also some nice information that came through, that 99% said they actually thank drivers for giving way on the roads, which is, I don't know whether it's an Irish thing or not, but it's nice to see that come across in the research.
Yes, and a lot of it seems to make sense and would align with, a lot of people's driving experiences, or maybe from their own views. But 82% of drivers claim they never use their mobile phone while driving.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think respondents have been 100% truthful in relation to that?
Well, I suppose we do have to consider that this survey was a self-assessment. It wasn't an observational study,
yeah,
such as, the RSA carry out fantastic work, and they've done some amazing campaigns as of late, as well as the Gardaí. But this was self-answered, if you like. So, yeah, you have to take that with a little bit of a pinch of salt. But in the last few years, when there have been observational studies, it was kind of in and around 25% were using their mobile phones. So, it's
and
there or thereabouts.
And because it's self-identifying, I wonder, are they counting, checking a snap or else, holding
exactly,
a phone up
yeah.
to the hand. So I think that's where the variance comes in there. 93%
yeah.
of drivers claim they've never misused a parking space. That means 7%
yeah.
do. And if you look at the amount of, in and around that, if you look at the amount of drivers there are, that's actually quite a large amount of drivers that are admitting to maybe using a child parking space,
mm-hmm.
A parent and child parking space, or using
yeah.
a disabled parking bay, double parking, I'll only be 5 minutes. So, whilst 93
yeah.
is great, what remains as a percentage of all of the cars on the road is not insignificant either, I think, when you can see the impact it has on these parking spaces.
Absolutely. And when you think of the amount of parking spaces, there's only a specific proportion allocated to disabled parking or parent and child spots, etc. So yes, 7% using them incorrectly, whether it's, just for nipping in for a pint of milk or whatever it is, it needs to be kind of reviewed. And it's a personal pet peeve of mine, I have to say, going to the local supermarket and there's parent and child spots that are taken up by clearly people that don't have any children. So
and what does it this survey tell us about the relationship between motorists and cyclists?
Yeah, so it was good to see that 94% answered that they recognize cyclists as equal road users. It's great to see, because over the past few years there has been an increase in, I suppose, cyclists being involved in road collisions, road fatalities. So for people to really now acknowledge them as equals on the road is really important for motorists.
It'll be interesting to throw maybe scooters in next year as well, if that hasn't been included.
Absolutely.
At this point. And also, too, I just wonder, and there's no harm in this at all, is this as maybe more of an urban-focused survey? Because I know 12% of drivers say they have used a bus lane during restricted hours. Now, that kind of feels like a city problem, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, no, it was sent out to, I suppose, our entire customer database. One or two of the questions, you're correct. The bus lane usage would be more focused on urban traffic.
And that being said, actually, sorry, you're more inclined to respond to that if you encounter bus lanes on a daily, aren't you, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else of note? One in three of us would intervene if they witness inappropriate parking. Actually, I thought quite interesting, because we often get contacts to this show where people do intervene and they often get effed out of it, if you pardon that expression.
Yeah.
But one in three still prepared to intervene if they saw someone pulling into a space they shouldn't be in.
Yes, and that's what the survey revealed. Now, I myself probably wouldn't,
no.
but I do. As I said, it is a personal pet peeve of mine, and I often, you know, curse them myself, but I wouldn't actually approach somebody, and I just think maybe karma might get them back as opposed to approaching them.
Yeah, junctions are good, roundabouts are good, but they all function far better if we indicate how we intend to use them, and you can't just presume because someone's in a certain lane, you know, the direction they're going. And, you know, an awful lot of people frustrated at other drivers not using their indicators.
Yeah, I think the main thing for us that came out of this is, you know, everyone recognises the dangerous behaviours, the top ones, and there's a lot of campaigns kind of promoting how to drive safely, obviously not to drink or drug drive, speeding and stuff like that. But maybe there's room for campaigns for the use of indicators, using lanes correctly on motorways. Roundabouts, a big one. We have a blog on the AA website, and you wouldn't believe the amount of hits that one of our blogs in particular gets, how to use a roundabout correctly. You know, maybe a small campaign about how to exit a roundabout, how to enter, what way you use your indicators. If it's a multi-lane roundabout, what is the correct lane to approach on, etc. Perhaps there's a room for a campaign, an educational campaign for motorists.
Yeah, all right, Jennifer. Listen, thanks for your time. Appreciate it. Jennifer Kilduff, who's Head of Marketing and PR with AA Ireland. Some interesting findings there. Now, back to our listener who got a warning about her daughter's driving, checked the dash cam, which she has access to, and said it was like a stage of the Donegal Rally. And she was wondering, are there any courses that she could encourage her daughter on, maybe to change her driving behaviour? One listener said, and I'm not sure how this might work, but they're interested in what your views are. I think that young lady driving dangerously should be reported to the Gardaí. The footage should be given to the Gardaí and they should caution her. Now, this would be mum or dad would have to do this. The listener says they should. Give them the footage, report them, and then the caller asks, what do others think? It'd be a tight one, but maybe some might say, look, if that's what changes the behaviour, well, then that's what's needed. Thank you, Greg. Very enjoyable and fair debate. Much common sense. Genuinely pro-ordinary, hardworking people discussion this morning. It just struck me, who sharpened John McAteer's sword? Not quite sure what that means, but there you go. Now, the harbour at Greencastle has created a monster and a death trap, believes a listener. Yachts won't leave the harbour. Boats have been smashed to pieces. The walkway is dangerous. People will be lost on it. People said that it would be great as they wanted the money. That is 25 million away into the tide, believes a listener. We did have a fisherman from that area who was concerned of the currents and what have you that it had created. Maybe that listener is also recognising that. Gangway washed away into the town, into the tide, pontoons ripped apart and boats breaking loose from the cleats, people risking their lives trying to save their boats. Where are all the experts who said this was the greatest addition now? I believe that also is referencing Greencastle Harbour as well. Caroline, did you say there was something on WhatsApp in relation to Greencastle Harbour? What was it? There is a video from the storm. Okay. Well, if you're watching, I'll get those up for you. If you're not watching, I will try and explain it. Oh, where's WhatsApp? I can't get in there quick enough now. Let me see. Where are these videos? Oh, right. I did actually see this on social media. Try and get this up. I'll play that a little bit later on. So they say gangway washed away into the tide, pontoons ripped apart and boats breaking loose from the cleats, people risking their lives trying to save their boats. Where are all the experts? So we'll have a wee look at that video and I'll describe it for those of you listening. But those of you watching will see that very shortly after the break. A caller says, my smoke alarm went off and now my power is off too in the Creaslough area. The power went off around 12:31 p.m. Did this happen to anybody else? So presumably it's returned now, because that was, I imagine that has to have been yesterday. But we shall see if anyone else was affected. You can text or WhatsApp us on 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000, or call us on 074 91 25000. Right, so let's have a quick look at this video of what's going on at Greencastle. During the storm. Wow, that is some swell that's going on there. I wonder why people didn't take their boats in. Maybe they thought that it was sheltered and protected, but you can see quite clearly there, it is very, very rough, and stuff being washed away and what have you. Yeah, okay. We'll try and find out more of what's happening there. I would have thought that that breakwater would have left that as a protected area, but clearly not. And the boats are lucky to still be there, if they are still there, in fact. All right, listener, thank you very much for sending that in. Quite informative. If you have any views on the impact, the changes to that harbour have had, get in touch with us. We'd be happy to hear your points of view. Right, we're joined on the programme now by Liam O'Brien. We're going to talk about the Greencastle Harbour. Liam, thanks for your time today. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. Good morning, your listeners.
Right, I'm just witnessing this video of clearly a storm. It's not actually a storm. It's actually, it's a swell, really, effectively. And stuff being washed away and boats tied up there, seemingly under quite a bit of duress. What's your view?
The whole thing's a disaster, Greg. So it was a disaster before it even started. I started a meeting one night prior to this, at the very start of this project going on, and a lot of the inshore men, what you were saying a way back, we were talking about this, about the currents and all.
I thought so, yeah.
Especially when we know this, we work the salmon and work them currents, work counter tides and all the rest, but this was going to happen. It's caused erosion on the far side at McKinney's Bank up off Glenburnie. It's caused erosion at McGilligan Point. All McGilligan Point's all led away. It's actually what it's done. It's actually the tide has got faster in it, and it's directed the tide towards the other side of the foil. It's basically eroding the whole of McGilligan Point right around, where there was a curvature in the point. If any of your listeners wants to go into Google Earth and go back in the archives from last year or prior to this development being built, would see it themselves, and go to the previous one, up to date one now, would tell you that. The storm yesterday, Greg, I was out in the morning with my dog down along the harbour, and I seen the motion in the harbour, the vessel I skipper in the harbour, there was a motion there. So I knew there was other vessels coming to land fish. So the harbourmaster contacted me. I went over to the Queen's Port, where this development is. Over at the Queen's Port, on the upper stream of Greencastle Harbour, witnessed a lot of cars, a lot of stuff going on over there. There's wee boats, ropes broke. One of them was up on top of the breakwater. And with the swell, which you likely have seen on some of them videos, you had three swells at one time, three waves at one time. They come in a freak of threes. And one of the lads jumped onto the boat, where it's specialised by the Coast Guard. The harbour master and all was present, jumped onto the boat with no life jacket. The boat actually ebbed out on the rock, and one could have come in and took him. And where there's debris, if he'd went into the water, the debris and all, he could have been tangled up in ropes or anything. But these are men that were desperate to save their boats. And they are complacent, because they think they have a finished job, what your Fianna Fáil TD was talking about. I'm not getting political about this, about a finished development. That is not a finished. It's a disaster. It's marine vandalism to the highest degree.
Well,
from the two sides of the foil.
If you've glanced at it, right, it's not massive, all right? You can see it sort of wraps around to try and offer a bit of protection there. How has this structure managed to have such a wider impact, this breakwater?
It's the bottleneck and into the foil, the weller. Now, you could have cam weller on here. Last year, I was aboard, went down to check the boat one night. It was a fine night, but you could hear the shore up down McGilligan Strand, the big swell, the drug up for the winter. And you get the first of the tide coming up the lock, and you have the swell, the round swell coming up, and it affects up. It actually nearly affects up to nearly onto Mobile, up to Glenburnie at Lyle's Point, below Mobile Light. The swell can't get up the river now. It's cupping. that breakwater 60 foot deep under the water. That's what's under the water. It's like an iceberg. And it's on the main flow of the tide. It's on the main flow of the flood tide. And it's cupping it now into the harbour. Now, there's men here that have been fishing for years here, up in 40-odd years, that have been breaking ropes across the harbour. It runs in across the cups into the harbour. On the 6th of April, the storm on the 6th of April, Saturday, the 6th of April, there was a southerly one, a southerly south-southwest one or southerly one. And it was blowing the spring tide in between the pier heads of the main pier and the breakwater. And with the momentum of that tide in, trying to get around and between the pier and the breakwater, it was going back out and hitting the main tide. Then we have this rip current tide that I was telling you way back about. It's coming down as the tide's going up the foil, heading for Derry. There's a counter tide coming down from the edge of the channel onto the mainland on the Donegal side, coming down. Three tides hitting. There was a vessel, a crabber, come from the northwest side of Scotland, up at northwest of Barra. Dodged storm the whole way down, and his owner phoned me to see what it'd be like coming into the harbour. Well, I told him, I can't make that decision for you. You can tell your skipper to come up and have a look at it. So he went up and I said, I will check the tides out for you and to see what time high water. It should fizzle away at high water, but you're running the main stream of tide. So the skipper went up, looked at it, and he says, no way was he going to risk his crew or the boat going into that harbour. And his owner made the same decision. I says, look, I got back onto the phone to him. The Coast Guard was called because somebody put out a feared that the boat had engine failure. It lay down lee off the weather. It was creating a tidal turbulence up from the back of the new co-op in Greencastle up across the breakwater. And I hear these people on here talking, it's a great job. And I hear people on saying that the fishermen have backed it. The inshore fishermen now will be going to the oysters. But they'll have to get them a boat here.
Like, what's a bit scary too here is, not scary, but like a harbour, the definition of a harbour is it is protected and deep enough to provide safety for ships or boats or vessels or whatever it might be. That's what a harbour is. Was it a sanctuary in bad weather previously? Or is this, we call it a harbour, was it always dicey at times, Liam? Or was it before the breakwater in, like, you know, somewhere where a boat could come and get protection from bad weather? Like, I'm trying to ascertain how bad it is now and the awful scenarios you described compared to it was before this breakwater went in.
Right. The breakwater went in, yes, we did have problems with the small inshore boats heading upstream to fish their oysters and that there, even pleasure craft. But we could have lived with it, what we were led to believe, that it wasn't going out any farther out onto the channel. So it was pushing us more out into danger, giving further rip current out on the thing, going up against, the tide going up against the one causes the effect.
Yep.
Cause effect of turbulence. One's fighting against the other. Now, most of the boats, what I was telling you prior to that, would go to Mavol Pier to have a safe journey up their fishing. Some of them wouldn't come back down if they're fishing for a couple of days up the river. They would stay at Mavol Pier. They would harbour at the two piers in Mavol. They won't come down over the breakwater if there's a flood tide in southwest one, because the two tides, the tide and the one, is fighting. And come down over that with a rip current and small vessels in the dark of night. You can't see what's coming at you. Or you can't see what's coming at you in the morning going up, because you're going up in the dark. You're going home in the dark at night, because
right.
They want their evenings, because it was the season. And there has been canoes coped over there. There's been canoes coped out there, where one of the canoes, what I told you about the thoughts, they're about 14 stone weight and tight along the shore, was taken out of it. They have created an animal there,
okay.
An animal. Now, the talk, I stood at a meeting, Greg, way back there when they were talking, there was to do with the community school in Mavol, to do with the fishery school and the swimming pool, to do with mica. An hour and a half, the mica went on. With Minister McConnell, and one of the Blaineys was at the meeting. An hour and a half. And I listened to women and grown men crying. And then to turn around after an hour and a half and reward them 25 million. And a young girl crying, she would have to go to Africa to love her partner, which, you know, be better going to Africa. And to build to build that animal out yes, there. But, that's but, what it is, an
but,
animal.
But whilst, do you remember when it was partly built? I think there was about $8 million that was spent on it.
Yeah.
And the only contacts I was getting, really, that I can remember, or the majority of them were, we need this breakwater, we need this breakwater, we need to find the money for this breakwater.
What I see here confuses me there.
So why was there this massive push? Because there was all this talk of €8 million, effectively, of what was underwater being washed away, and we need to top. It was topped off. Do you remember there was another fortune spent on topping it off, and then of course then more money was found to actually finish it off. So at what point did this become, as you would see, a disadvantage rather than an advantage?
When they done the last project on it, the last extension on it, that's where it held basically worse. Like, I know there's big boats, yes, do need shelter, but they come a height on spring tides, the size of the boats will break ropes. Last year's winter storm, like saying that one of the fishermen from the large vessel small and says never broke a rope. Well, there was ropes broke that night, and there's videos of that too. The seas were coming the height of the pier hairs. The pier heads, the top of the concrete and the pier. Now, I know one here was all right because a fisherman phoned me from Morris because it was that stormy, he couldn't get out. His boat was up here sheltering over the winter. He asked me, what's the boat like the pier? Now, I knew one of my colleagues had the cameras on the boat facing his boat, and he was looking from the house, and he says, no, the boats are okay. But I says to the owner from Oris, I says, the ones away in the west now should be too bad. And then one of my other colleagues sent a video of it coming in, and it was west of the one. It should not be coming in that pier head. It should be that breakwater should be sheltering it. And those ropes broke at night in one of the larger vessels. And the crew of two crabbers had to stay aboard awake all night in case they broke ropes onto the one abated and the tide abated. It's a disaster. And they talk about this bike, 300 something million, and the house is falling down around us. That's a joke.
So what do you see as the solution then?
Look, I have pointed out to Parry McDonough, he was launching about the last day, and he says, have you told lice? Well, you're not getting it from all the fishermen. You're getting it from parish pump politics. That's what you're getting here, parish pump politics. The fishermen don't exist in here. We're lying. I have counted six yachts. Now, maybe possibly two of them yachts went out over the summer. The rest of them was owned by seafarers, fishermen and that there. Wouldn't knock out. Now, there was two motorboats. They were taken off them at the early start of the week here because they knew the weather was coming. But if you're inviting pleasure craft here or visiting yachts here to come, and this happens again, they're either boats going to be destroyed. It's done now. But the one I want, and I want it the way back because I can see it happening. There's going to be somebody drowned up the back of that breakwater between Glen and Burnley. Between the breakwater and Glenmorney with the ripcorns, I fish up there. As you says, me a disgruntled fisherman. I'm not a disgruntled fisherman. I'll negotiate around it. But if
so
you just tell
me, how is it resolved? Is it to? Obviously, when it went out and encroached into the channel, then it starts influencing tides and what have you. Is it a case of?
Right, they'll come back now. As I call the parish pump police to come back now with American out all the way. Now, they've created another tide there. That tide will go out and hit the main tide on an end tide. That'll go out and hit the main tide and end tide. The tide's going out the lock. There's another tide coming up across the village in Greencastle. And if you looked at them videos, and there were studios there yesterday, that are the one. You need room to come in there with them large vessels. You need room to come in. And for them to go down below the pier now and extend it to the pier, that's not going to work because they're still exposed to the elements. That the one, and the pressure was on there yesterday. That wasn't bad one yesterday. That wasn't bad one. That was only about a 30 to 40 mile an hour one. That should have been all right. As the exposure to the one, how far up do you go? How far up do you go with the tide and the one to do that there? Now, I don't know if you're going on a boat up there, but if you're going on a spring tide, and yesterday, where are the dead low neaps there yesterday? That's the lowest tides, the laggest tides. Mm-hmm. If that had been spring tides, that would have been a different story. That would have been a lot worse. The gangways all broke off. There's bits of it lying there, but there was There was a few boats, the ropes broke on them, but the lifeboat was out. They made a decision at a time to, they were devising would they go out or not go out. But it was getting very dangerous there for the men. It was actually trying to save the boats.
Yeah, okay.
It was getting out of one of them boys with that lad would have run off that boat. That boat would have coped over with she had ebbed out in the rock and the boat went over. Mm-hmm. It'd have been on the top of the debris. There was that much debris on around the pier.
Right. Okay. Listen, we'll leave it there. We'll see.
It's sad to see it. Well, yes, we need a harbour and a harbour thing, but there's only so far you go. Now if you looked at Galway, Peter Sweetman took a thing in Galway where they're extending Rossabille Harbour. And I can't understand how they got away with building that out there or where the engineers were in that there.
And I presume like they thought initially that this would create shelter between the breakwater and the pier where the Greencastle McGilligan ferry sails out of.
Well, I think a lot of them would be seafaring people who was involved in this. Like, as oh, we get the money and somebody else doesn't get it. This is, yes, it's suitable, but it was never suitable there with the rip currents. But every pier from Maharorty to Bunkrana to Malin Head to Kildaff, and you heard Johnny McGinnis on about, and the way that we are being used and the inshore fishermen have been used, especially the Northern Ireland, at Rex Adjustment Funding, they use the fishermen, the Northern Ireland fishermen, to draw down the Rex Adjustment, because Johnny McGinnis come on after announcement of Malin Head, Kildaff and Glengad, Pierce, we need money, we need money.
All right.
Kildaff was all summed up about the breakwater. I'm sorry for keeping you on.
No, Kildaff, I just have to move on. Okay,
yeah,
listen,
yeah.
Thanks very
but,
much.
But that's no bother, Greg.
All right, listen, I really do appreciate it. Thanks very much for your time. Right, okay. Really pleased to welcome on to the show David McCourt. He's owner of Global Investors, Granahan McCourt Capital, and chair of the National Broadband Ireland, and is being awarded the prestigious Tip O'Neill Diaspora Award, or is receiving an award at it. It's in recognition for his outstanding contribution to Ireland and our international relations. Good morning, David, and a big congratulations to you. Hello, David, can you hear me? No, I'm struggling to get David there, so I wonder we can look into that. I'm from Malin and have a Fine Gael background. I've asked the Office of Charlie McConlogue for help twice and they've helped me twice. My number one is going his way. I'll be shocked if you broadcast this as it never happened before. No, this is exactly, please understand, this is precisely the reason why I made the appeal for people to text in earlier. Why wouldn't I broadcast that? I invited people to send in such text messages. Read the dangerous driver. The parent needs to have an open and frank conversation with their daughter. If they're old enough to drive, they're old enough for an adult conversation about their behaviour. Also, Hugh McLaughlin Training from Dunloe does a car maintenance course with a huge focus on safety and highly recommended to all drivers, not just young drivers indeed. And I've spoke to Hugh before a number of times in this show and he really is impressive. David McCourt, can you hear me now?
I can, Greg. I can hear you fine.
Fantastic, David. We need some of your technological expertise to sort out our phone lines. Very good morning to you and congratulations on your award, David.
Thank you very much. It's a real honour. It's a real pleasure to be up here in Donegal, I'll tell you.
How connected beautiful are you to Donegal emotionally, David? Because, of course, you have very strong family connections.
Well, most of my family is from Galway, and I live myself in the west of Clare. So it's sort of a long way from here, but I have a connection with all of Royal Ireland because when we were fortunate enough to get the contract to wire all of Royal Ireland, and Ireland will be the only country in Europe that's going to leave no man or woman behind. So everyone gets a fiber, and we made a commitment, all of us, when we got the contract, that wiring Royal Ireland was just going to be the beginning. And what we were going to spend most of our effort on is teaching people how to use that fiber to make their life better. And, technology is a two-edged sword, isn't it,
yeah,
Greg? You know, it can take over your life or it can help you. And what we want this technology to do is to create dignified jobs in Royal Ireland. So Royal Ireland is the gold standard for the rest of Europe on how we create a better community, better healthcare, better education, in better, more dignified jobs.
I mean, there's no doubt that this is a significant or certainly the most significant thing since the electrification of Ireland.
Well, I think that's right. And we just came from the Black Valley last week. And, you know, it took them till 1977 to get electricity there. And now they have fiber. So this will be looked upon in the future as transformative for rural Ireland. And it will be the gold standard and the North Star for the rest of Europe to look at how they do it. And I'm not sure any other country will be brave enough, as Ireland was, to say we'll leave no one behind. It was a very brave move by the government at the time, and I think it will prove to be transformative for Ireland, or I hope it will be anyway.
Yeah, I mean, you've been very, you've been at the forefront of many innovations over your long career. I'd be really interested in your views on what you see, either the potential or the downfalls of the likes of artificial intelligence.
Well, we have to. That's a very good question, and it's a topic that I spend a lot of time on. If Donegal's a long way from Clare, I'm on my way to Abu Dhabi next week to talk about that very issue, which is even farther away from Clare. But that artificial intelligence and the metaverse and all those things that people are scared of, they're coming, whether you like it or not.
Yeah.
And we need to use them to make education cheaper, to make healthcare cheaper, to make healthcare and education more accessible. We need to use them to make society better, not worse. All the things you hear about, like fake news and divisiveness, those things exist with or without technology.
Do you believe given the power of it, and it's probably not the right analogy, but do you think we have the ability to control the genie or to keep the genie in the bottle so that we get the benefits of it and avoid the many pitfalls? Because it is so powerful and perhaps even more powerful beyond our knowledge right now.
Well, over time, artificial intelligence will make far fewer mistakes than humans do. So it will be, we can use artificial intelligence to prevent fake news as opposed to creating fake news. We can use artificial intelligence to transform radiology and all sorts of parts of the medical community and drug discovery and education. So yes, we can control it. But the question is, can we control society with or without artificial intelligence? Society is guarding the sense of community in the sense of we're all in this together has sort of been diluted all over the world. That's a different issue and a bigger problem that we have to get our
obviously look in the minutes, you know, the most dangerous things are bullets and bombs and all that type of stuff, but I think at the moment what's destabilizing the world is information, misinformation, disinformation, what's true, what's not true, controlling the narrative, influencing, you know, we've got loads of vested interests that seem like the torchbearers for free speech. There's a lot going on at the moment, David, in that space, and I think that is, like, the disruptive ripples of that, I think, are being felt right across the world.
Oh, I agree with you 100%. The world has become unhinged, and it's not technology's fault that it's become unhinged. It's people's fault, right? It seems to be very little repercussion and accountability for not only fake news, but for, as to use your words, bullets and bombs. You can invade countries. You can displace people. You can have forced immigration. You can push people out of their homeland. You can drop bombs almost indiscriminately. With very little repercussion globally, it seems. So that's a much bigger problem than we're going to be able to solve in the next 2 minutes. But technology is not causing that problem. We need to figure out how to use technology to solve some of those problems.
I agree. You are the expert. I do believe, though, a lot of what's happening is being guided by a conversation online, and it's not technology's fault, it's our fault. But anyway, that could be a full hour's debate, a conversation. I'd love that with you, David, at some time.